Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. In the recent book, The Green Amendment, Securing Our Rights to a Healthy Environment, author Maya K. Van Rossen advocates for the protection of our environment as a constitutional right. Our right to a healthy environment should be protected as firmly as we protect other fundamental rights like free speech, freedom of religion, and property rights. Environmental activist Maya K. Van Rossen connects via phone to 411 Teen. Maya, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, I look forward to talking with you. Maya is a veteran environmentalist and an attorney. She is also the executive director of the Delaware River Keepers Network, an organization that has successfully stalled fracking and pipeline development in the Northeast. Joining me here at the roundtable in the studio, I welcome Isabella Rose. Isabella is an 11th grade student at Sale High School. She's into photography, urban planning, and environmental issues.
Hi, my name is Isabella, and I really want to thank my U.S. history teacher, Caitlin, for giving me this opportunity to talk about something I'm passionate about.
Maya, we'll start with, what is a Green Amendment?
A Green Amendment is a constitutional provision that's placed in the Bill of Rights or Declaration of Rights section of a state or federal constitution that recognizes and protects the right to clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment as an inalienable right, mm-hmm. and protects and recognizes that right the same way we protect and recognize other fundamental rights we hold dear, like the right to free speech and freedom of religion and our private property rights, for example.
What was the impetus for writing the new book, The Green Amendment?
Well, in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we had a very pro-drilling and fracking piece of legislation that was passed in 2012. And we had been fighting fracking for a long time with various levels of success. But we knew that this devastating piece of legislation, which would have mandated that drilling and fracking be allowed to happen in every part of every community in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, including as close as 300 feet from people's homes, we knew we had to find a way to challenge this piece of legislation. But how do you challenge a law that's been passed by the legislators of a state? We took a look at the Pennsylvania Constitution, and we looked to a constitutional provision that had been in the Constitution for over 40 years, but had been legally ignored because of some early Supreme Court decisions that declared it to be just a statement of policy. We decided we might be in a moment in time, a moment in history, when we could breathe legal life into that provision because of this devastating pro-fracking law that had passed. So we challenged the law, and we used as our argument that the law violated the environmental rights of the people of Pennsylvania as embodied in this constitutional provision. Amazingly, in December of 2013, we got a beautifully written decision out of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court that breathed legal life into this constitutional environmental rights amendment and declared for the first time that the people of Pennsylvania had an inalienable constitutional right to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment. Wow. And that as a result, provisions of this law were unconstitutional. That was the inspiration. I mm-hmm. then went and looked at states across the nation, and what I found was that there was only one other state that had this highest level of constitutional recognition and protection. That state is Montana. And so having witnessed the power and importance of a constitutional environmental rights amendment and seeing a vision for the future where people genuinely have the right to a healthy environment, I just realized that we needed to take this new path towards environmental protection here in the United States of America.
Wow, that's impressive. We really commend you. Now, describe for us the Delaware Riverkeeper Network and how that worked with this.
So the Delaware Riverkeeper Network is a grassroots advocacy organization. We work throughout the four states of the Delaware River watershed, which includes New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Delaware, and we work at the federal level. I, as the Delaware Riverkeeper, have the honor of bearing the title of being the Delaware Riverkeeper and being the lead advocate for the protection and restoration of the main stem Delaware and all the streams that feed it. But of course, protecting any natural resource really is the job of a community, and giving our natural resources a voice in our human world really is the job of a community. And so that's why we have, and I lead, the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, because the Delaware Riverkeeper Network is all about creating and supporting and bringing together that community that will fight for the Delaware River. But this Green Amendment vision is really bigger, right, than mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, and it's bigger than the Delaware River watershed, which, of course, includes more states than Pennsylvania. It really needs to be a national movement to have mm-hmm. the genuine impact of protecting our natural resources across the United States of America. So this initiative, this Green Amendment initiative, is something we're doing through the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, but it's really a national movement. And so I'm going state to state trying to inspire and support communities who want to seek and secure their own Green Amendments.
Okay. I have Isabella here, and she is just passionate. I wish you were here. And you could, when I told her, you know, about the program, she was just so thrilled. So I wanted her to share a little bit about herself, because I think it's just so reassuring when you have young folks who are as passionate as you are. I mean, she was just thrilled to be here. So Isabella, share a little bit about yourself and your interest and why you were so thrilled to participate.
I was so thrilled to participate because of my interest in conserving environment and acknowledging the problems that have been created in the natural environment we were given. And I really got interested in it through my photography and having to go out into nature and then taking photos of it and realizing that it wasn't what it used to be. Like mm-hmm. Wakulla Springs looks nothing like it used to be. The water is like a Coca-Cola brown, and that's because the amount of nitrogen in it.
Right.
And then realizing places like the Wasissa and people in the Wakena and the Nestle and how they're using the Wasissa as to use their water for their water bottles, and realizing like the amount of problems that were happening in my home state and even in my town, and like mm-hmm. realizing that like I, as a young person, had the power to become involved and be proactive in it rather than just protesting but demanding something, and like calling my legislative and calling my state senators. And being like, I don't agree with what you're doing. I don't agree with this bill that you've brought up in legislation, and I don't agree, or I agree with this bill you've brought up, and I would really love to see it passed.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always just wanted to be like instrumental in like having people realize the environment is a very fragile thing, and that it was a gift for us, that it was a gift for us to utilize, and that we've taken advantage of some of the things that it's given us, and not helped it back, and not given it mm-hmm. the attention and love it deserves, and the ability to grow and restore itself.
Okay. All right. Maya, how would you define a healthy environment? What do we mean when we say healthy environment? What are we talking about?
So the first thing I just really want to acknowledge is that what Isabella said is so beautiful,
mm-hmm.
right? Just such a beautiful
Isn't
way
it?
To think about our Earth and to think about her role in protecting it. So I really want to take a moment to honor what you just yeah. said, because it really is so beautiful and inspirational itself. So thank you for having that vision.
Thank you.
And I think what Isabella has shown through her words and her descriptions of how natural resources are being abused across the state in Florida is that our current environmental protection laws are not doing the job of protecting our environment.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the way our laws are written, they're really written to manage pollution. They're not focused on preventing pollution and degradation. Now, when we think about having a constitutional right to a healthy environment, right, and defining what does it mean to have a healthy environment, that's really, frankly, the definition is going to be different depending on what natural resources we're talking about and what communities we're talking about. It's going to rely on good, strong advocacy and good politicians that we place in office. And frankly, just like every other constitutional right, it's going to require courts to get involved when governments overstep and allow so much pollution that it's damaging people's lives. So in this moment, right, when we think about passing these constitutional provisions, we don't actually instantly know across the board what industrial operations or developments can stay and which ones have to go or have to be transformed in order to honor the right to have a healthy environment. But fundamentally, what a constitutional provision will do is make environmental protection and thinking about our environment be given highest priority status in the decision-making process as we work through step-by-step, day-by-day, resource-by-resource, and community-by-community to really define what does it mean to have a genuine constitutional right to a healthy environment.
Right, yeah. And and I understand what you're saying when you say it really varies depending on where you are and the location. Because here in Florida, oh, let's look at Florida. I mean, Florida has a lot of environmental threats. I mean, we have hurricanes and subterranean toxins and petroleum tanks, and we have areas where there are clusters of cancer and unchecked pollution. I mean, all of that is happening right here in Florida. The water is spoiled in many places, and we have tanks. I guess they aren't saying that they're leaking in the aquifers, but it appears like they may be leaking. And you mentioned, Maya, about the laws. Our state laws don't require notification of hazardous conditions, whereas some state laws may. Here in Florida, they don't require that. And I think you touched on that earlier when you were talking about it. I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a real brief break and we'll return. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens. And this hour, we are looking at the environment. And we have a special author and environmentalist joining us. We'll return shortly. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me here in the studio is Isabella Rose. She is a student at Sale High School. She's in the 11th grade, and photography and urban planning and environment are her thing. And we have author, attorney, executive director, Maya Van Rossen, and she advocates for the protection of our environment as a constitutional right. Maya, there's so many questions we have. I mean, if you have any that you want to pose to her, but what do we do when we have these natural environmental threats? Is the best way, I guess the best way you're saying is that we have to go the constitutional route, because that is going, that's what I understand you saying as far as addressing them.
Yeah, I mean, there's really, I think, three things that jump to mind.
Okay.
First off, when you see a major threat to your local stream or creek or to your drinking water supply or to the quality of your air, first you have to get organized. Right, and get organized to take on the battle of fighting to protect that natural resource, fighting to protect your community. Second, you do have to, as part of that advocacy, really look to the current laws that are in place at the state level, at the federal level, and do what you can to use those laws and use your grassroots activism and your powerful voices to advocate for the highest level of protection you can get in this moment. But I think longer term, what we need to add to that activism for the environment is this proactive movement to secure in the state constitution a constitutional right in the Bill of Rights section that recognizes and protects the right to clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment, and doesn't just protect it for those of us who are here on Earth today, mm-hmm. but protects it for okay. the generations yet to come. Because in Florida, when you read the Constitution, if you read Article 2, Section 7, Florida's Constitution does talk about natural resources and scenic beauty, but it talks about it as good policy, mm. or it talks about it in that the state should pass laws. But if your state isn't passing laws that are preventing all of those devastating environmental threats that you just listed out, then the state laws really aren't doing the job. We need a higher power, and I do believe that higher power is a Bill of Rights constitutional amendment that protects the right to a healthy environment.
Do you have a question?
So with the Green Amendment, would it include like laws that would prevent hydraulic fracturing in states and the elimination of hydraulic fracturing that's already happening in states?
So think about it. Think about the right to free speech, right? When you think about a constitutional provision, right, our constitutional say we have the right to free speech. It's just a fundamental, basic, overarching recognition that we have this right to free speech. Or you can, you know, think of freedom of the press or religious freedom. The constitutional provision itself doesn't go into all the ins and outs of all the changes and actions and activities and the decisions that have to happen to honor and protect that right to free speech. It's that overarching vision and provision and protection that the Constitution gives. So that's what you will have with a Green Amendment, is you will have a statement in the Bill of Rights section that asserts, recognizes that the people have an inalienable right mm-hmm. to clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment, that those rights have to be protected for the generations, and that government has a duty to honor and protect those rights. And if violated, right, then people can rise up and challenge that infringement. So you're not going to have all the specifics of how that environmental right plays out in every context. But just take fracking, for example. What we can see when you look at the science and you look at the reality of what is happening in communities where fracking is taking place, it is taking from people their healthy drinking water. It's taking their healthy air. It's taking their healthy lives. So it's really clear that that industry overreaches and does, in fact, take from people their right to a healthy environment. In places where you don't yet have fracking, you can then use the constitutional provision to keep it out. Mm. In places where you do have fracking, we are, just like we have in Pennsylvania, we are now having to use that constitutional provision to sort of more piecemeal claw back that grounds of protection, but the constitutional provision gives us the legal strength to accomplish that. It's just going to take a little bit longer because you have to do it piece by piece. You can't just do this blanket, keep it out, right? So it's a little bit more difficult and time-consuming, but the constitutional provision gives us the opportunity to get us off those dirty fossil fracked fuels and get us onto that clean energy pathway that's so critical for our environment and for future generations.
So Pennsylvania and Montana are currently the only states that have green amendments, correct?
That is correct.
Now, which states have the most, I guess I would say, the most environmental protection laws? Are there some that, I mean, I would guess there's some that are better than others.
Yeah, when you look across the nation, right, I mean, you know, different states do it differently based mm-hmm. on various natural resources and the politics of the day. But fundamentally, every single state and at the federal level, environmental protection laws are written to manage pollution, to decide how, when, and where it can happen. They're not really focused on pollution prevention or environmental degradation prevention. It's more about management. And that's why we end up having this situation where our government officials look at our environmental protection laws, sort of check the boxes, and say, okay, we're going to allow more and more degradation to be foisted on our communities. And they don't look at the cumulative impacts. And so you can end up having so many industrial operations in one urban community that their air becomes so polluted that it gives people cancer, right?
Right.
The check-the-box management approach to environmental protection is what allows that to happen. If you have a constitutional provision, government officials have to do that extra level of review before they can allow another polluting industrial operation to be placed in some low-income or minority community. They have to look big picture and say, if we allow this new industrial polluter in this community, will we end up putting so much pollution in the air that it's going to make people sick and give them cancer or take from them their very lives or the quality of their lives? If the answer is yes, then the constitutional provision, right, would prevent that bad decision. So it's that extra layer that really requires much more thoughtful, protective decision-making from the get-go.
Do you have a question?
That I'm just blown away because I feel like one of the most basic human rights everybody has is the right to life, is the right to live your life and to live your life healthily without fear of looking out for, like, impending doom, and the fact that these environment issues that are happening are being allowed, that are happening, are infringing on the right to live a healthy life and a safe life. And that feels like it's the biggest issue, is to keep citizens alive and to keep them well. And yet when this happens, it's a simple concern of, like, what's the money that we can make off of it and how can we, like, manage it, rather than the fact of there's no concern for the human life there. There's no concern for the animal life there. The fact that we all deserve to live because we were all born to live. We were all born to, like, grow up and live our lives, and that these problems are infringing upon that, but nobody seems to be – our officials who control those issues and who make those choices for us aren't making the choice to save us or to help us.
And I guess, Maya, my question to you would be, from your perspective, why do we see this lack of concern amongst the politicians and the policies that they enforce or recommend?
You know, that is always such a difficult question to answer. I ask myself that question every time I go into a new battle for the environment or a new battle for a community that's being exposed to dangerous toxins that's literally making their community sick. I cannot fathom how these politicians, how these regulators and decision makers can, in good conscience, day in and day out, allow more and more pollution to be foisted on our communities, or to continue in a community that's already being overridden with degradation, because they themselves need clean water and clean air and a healthy environment in order to have a healthy life. So I do find it a difficult question. I find often, though, politicians and decision makers suddenly view the environment differently when it's actually their family or their environments that are being threatened. It's quite amazing how that happens. But nonetheless, right, I think our jobs as activists and advocates for the environment and for our communities is not really to worry as much about why they're doing it, unless it helps inform our strategy, but really to make the case that what they're doing is fundamentally wrong, and give them, use our advocacy, use our political tools, use all the tools we have to get the right outcome. And I believe that fundamentally we're missing the biggest tool in the toolbox, and it is the Constitution. Because here in the United States of America, anytime anybody is advocating powerfully for a fundamental freedom, they are able to point to the Constitution. Right? And they are viewed as powerful patriots advocating for a constitutional right. whether or not people agree with them. When it comes to the environment, we don't have that most powerful legal tool. So one, we, you know, suffer from that missing legal strength, but two, we also then fall prey to name calling, right? We're tree huggers or job killers or people
right.
haters. But if we had a constitutional provision that honored and protected our right to a healthy environment, then we would be viewed the same way other constitutional advocates are viewed. We would be viewed as the patriots we are, patriots fighting for the earth for the benefit of us all. So that's, you know, the constitutional approach just fundamentally can change the whole framework all the way around and give us that powerful tool in the toolkit to hold government officials accountable when they are just unwilling to hold themselves accountable.
Well, I know that you and the Delaware Riverkeepers Network created what I would call a powerful tool called the For the Generations, and it's a guide. And would you share that with us? It's a guide, I guess, to protect the environment across the country.
So we created a website, For the Generations, F-O-R, thegenerations.org, where we are both putting up tools and resources to help people understand and advocate for securing green amendments in state constitutions across the nation. And then also, as we get communities and states really advancing constitutional provisions in their state, to have a place, to have a platform that we can help magnify their good work. In fact, since we've started this movement, we actually have constitutional provisions being proposed in New York, in New Jersey, and in Maryland. Now, that's not to say they're about to pass, right? We still have a lot of hard work ahead of us. But we've gotten politicians to get on board with the realization that this is a very powerful tool that that they need to bring into the state in order to honor the right for people to have healthy lives because they have healthy environments. And so we are using the For the Generations platform, for example, to help magnify what's happening in those states. And we hope to be able to add other states, right, as the movement gets going.
Okay. You have a question?
I wish there was something like that in Florida, because we have such a diversity here in Florida, especially with our wildlife and our environment, and with the Everglades and the thing like that. And what I want to know is how, like, I could be proactive in starting a movement here and including other people in it and getting a representative to listen, or even just getting a group of people to understand, like, the need that Florida would – the improvement Florida would have from this amendment, from an amendment like this, or even just a movement like this.
So you're just asking for it. How you get it started?
Yeah. Just like, how would I just get off the ground and get people to listen and really understand, like, this is a movement to change?
Well, first off, it is so wonderful, Isabella, to hear you say that, because the truth is, right, this movement needs young leaders like you to get it off the ground and to advance it forward, because it is your future Earth, right, that we are impacting with the decisions that we are making today, whether they're good decisions or bad, and unfortunately so many of them are bad decisions. So we really need your voice going to elected officials to make the case to them that not only are the environmental protection laws we have in place failing us, but that there is, in fact, something better, right? That there is a better, stronger tool for environmental protection, and it is this idea of having a green amendment. So one thing you can really just start doing is reaching out to your legislators with letters, with phone calls, with meetings. If you have a school group, right, trying to get your community, your school group, or your community environmental group to take up this cause to champion, because it does need that. It does need champions. It does need leaders who see the power and importance of it, recognize that it's going to be a lot of hard work, and yet still want to go for it because they can see how powerful it can be in protecting our present and future Earth. And as you said, Isabella, just recognizing that we all have a fundamental right to a healthy environment. And it is not fair nor appropriate for our government officials to use jobs or claims of profits as their excuse to allow our environments to degrade. It's just fundamentally morally wrong, it's legally wrong, and a constitutional provision can help us change that. Yeah. I can tell you that I have been to Florida a couple of times to speak about the book and to speak with some community groups about this idea, and I know that there is interest in different places in Florida. I'm just looking for those champions that want to rise up and fight for it, and I would be happy if there is any community group, any environmental organization that would like me to come and speak about the Green Amendment, the book, speak about the Green Amendment, the concept, I will be happy at my own expense to come and talk with you about this important idea and think about ways to get it off the ground for the state of Florida.
That would be amazing. So at my school, at Sale High School, we're a pretty alternative school compared to the traditional high schools that we have here. And we celebrate Earth Day each year, and we do programs about conserving the natural wildlife in Florida and what we can do and what we're not supposed to do and really understanding the species in here. And one of the things we do is we have guest speakers that come and talk to us about it, not only on Earth Day, but all around the year. And we have these presentations where people present their path of change, what they would like to change. We've had people come speak about factory farming, about growing your own food, sex education. And I think it'd be an amazing event to have you there and really talk about the Green Amendment and talk about how we as young people should be proactive in change. Because we can protest, and I've been to protests and I've walked, but there's something about being proactive and demanding action from people that really gets your message across.
Well, hold your thoughts for a second. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return very shortly.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and we are talking about the Green Amendment. Maya, would you address environmental, what I call environmental injustices? And I'm talking about, you know, hazardous industries, waste materials that may be located in communities where the individuals may be displaced, their income may be low, they may be of a particular race or ethnicity, and particularly when we see these type of environmental injustices occurring in these poorer communities.
That is just such an important issue. Communities of color, minority mm-hmm. communities, low-income communities are so often targeted for highly polluting industrial operations and infrastructure. And to be frank, while the government officials may not own up to it, they are targeted because they don't have that same access to the halls of power. They don't have the same financial resources to mount a battle. And so they become the sacrifice zones, the environmental sacrifice mm-hmm. zones where environmental contamination is concentrated in order to protect other communities farther away from having to suffer at the hands of that polluting industrial operation. And in fact, what you can see across the board, that communities of color have higher exposure rates to pollutants of all kinds, whether you're talking about air pollution or water pollution or hazardous waste sites. In fact, minority children don't have to wait to be born mm-hmm. to have a higher level of exposure to toxic contamination. They have more exposure while they are in their mother's tummies, forming into the little people that they will one day become. It's really devastating. The beautiful power of a constitutional environmental right is that it protects the rights of all people to clean water, clean air, and healthy environment. A properly written and placed constitutional provision will acknowledge that we all have the right to a healthy environment. We all have that same right to a healthy environment. And that government officials must protect our environmental rights equitably. They can no longer sacrifice one community and their access to a healthy environment in order to benefit or protect another community. So when it comes to environmental justice issues and issues of environmental racism, having a constitutional provision is a really powerful tool because it prevents government from continuing to perpetuate this idea of environmental sacrifice zones and literally subjecting minority and low-income communities to more and more pollution so that these politicians, you know, can protect their friends that live in some ritzy neighborhood somewhere else.
We were just talking about that. You have comment you want to talk about?
Yeah, that's – I've always been interested in that, in the specifics of urban planning, environmental planning, and really going into areas like that and advocating for them and giving them a voice that people will listen to because they aren't listened to for some reason. They aren't given the same right as others in better neighborhoods. And the fact that we're all humans and we all have a connection to each other. We're all born on this earth and we all use its resources and we should all come together and really respect its resources and how we get them and how we use them and what we do to it. And I just – it's the point of like polluting – there's going to be a time when those areas get so polluted and so bad that they will have to move on to the better neighborhoods, as they call them, the better neighborhoods. And it's the fact of like we shouldn't have to wait for that to happen to do something. We should understand that these people have as much of a right – as other people do, to environmental safety.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what's so horrific is that often there are many communities that are really already at that point, right? But the people don't have the financial resources to be able to make that kind of move. And so they are literally forced to stay in place and watch the health of their children and their friends and their families be impacted, watch their property values continue to decline because, you know, if they own property, because who wants to buy property in such a highly contaminated area, right? To have to watch the quality of their lives degrade because they can't sit outside because of the stinky air, but the dangerous air that they subject themselves to if they do sit outside, right? So we really do have communities already across the nation that are suffering in this way. If environmental rights amendments, if green amendments were passed into every state across the nation and into the federal constitution, not only would we prevent new sacrifice zones, but there would be an obligation on government to go back and restore these already degraded environments where the pollution and the degradation is so severe that it has already taken from people their environmental rights, right? Because they still will have their right, their constitutional right to a healthy environment. Just because they lost it in the preceding decades doesn't mean they're not entitled to get it back. So there does then become an obligation on government to restore the environment in order to restore those environmental rights.
Maya, would you talk about the Constitution Revision Commission proposal number 23?
Yeah, so Prop 23, at this point, my understanding is that Prop 23 in the state of Florida is, for lack of a better word, dead. That's my understanding.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
But it's an important concept, right? And it's important to ask that question so that people really understand. In Florida, like in many other states, there is this periodically required revisit of the state constitution to determine whether or not there are revisions that the state would want to make. In the state of Florida, over the past year, the Constitution Revision Commission has been meeting to undertake just that kind of consideration. And there was a proposal to add additional language to the Florida state constitution having to do with the environment. But when you look at the proposal that was put forth, and for which there was some support and energy, it was not what I call a green amendment. It was not recognizing the right, the inalienable right to clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment in the Bill of Rights section of the state constitution. What it did was it added additional language to the already existing provision, which again refers to the environment as good public policy or in need of state lawmaking, right? But it's that fundamentally lower level of recognition and or protection. And the new language just did not overcome these deficiencies. So in the big scheme of things, I think really what Florida needs and needed was not this proposed provision. This is not the right provision for Florida, but a new provision to be advanced that will put a green amendment in the Bill of Rights section of the Florida Constitution. At this point, that I don't believe can happen through the Constitution Revision Commission. I think that boat has sailed. But it can happen through other mechanisms, other legal mechanisms. For example, the state legislature could put forth through legislation an amendment to the Florida Constitution, right? There are other legal pathways. There are better pathways. And my hope is that we do have some Florida champions and communities that really rise up and pursue those other pathways for securing a genuine green amendment in the state of Florida.
What did the amendment exactly outline, the one that was proposed? Like, what was the language used in it?
So the actual Proposal 23, what it did was it maintained entirely the existing language, which talks about, it begins, it shall be the policy of the state to conserve and protect its natural resources and scenic provision, scenic beauty. Adequate provision shall be made by law for the abatement of air and water pollution, et cetera, et cetera. So as long as you have laws, even if they're bad laws that don't protect the environment, that constitutional obligation has been fulfilled. And frankly, that's the state that Florida and so many other states are already in. We have laws. They're just not laws that are doing the job. Proposal 23 was going to add another paragraph that was going to talk about what it was going to say was that the natural resources of the state are the legacy of present and future generations, that every person has a right to a clean and healthful environment, including clean air and water, control of pollution. And there was more beautiful language like that, but it's not in the Bill of Rights section, and it ends with any person may enforce this right against any party, public or private, subject to reasonable limitations as provided by law. So again, we are now back in this rubric of it being good policy that is really defined and defended by the passage of laws, necessarily by the state legislature. You don't have good laws, you don't have these rights that are so beautifully described in that provision. And again, it's not in the Bill of Rights section. So we're not recognizing the right to a healthy environment as a fundamental inalienable right that's deserving that same highest level of protection that the other fundamental freedoms we hold dear get, like the right to freedom of religion, right? So the right to a healthy environment is something much lesser than under this approach. Now, if the people of Florida, if there were, you know, champions in Florida that wanted to pursue a strong green amendment in the Bill of Rights section, frankly, for some of the groups that I've already worked with, I really have some very good, strong language to offer to suggest that would result in a genuine green amendment for the state of Florida.
Okay. Wow. That's impressive. That's great. In these last few minutes, of course, that we have tons of things that we'd like to ask you, but I'd like to talk a little bit about energy injustices. I mean, when I say that, I think about coal and uranium mining and oil drilling and biomass. The biomass appears to be the new kid on the block. What is the status of biomass plants overall?
Yeah, so So, you know, I think that there is a lot of debate over biomass, and there is a lot of concern about its heavy environmental footprint. And I think, as you said, it has become the new kid on the block, but the heavy environmental footprint of that approach to energy creation is on par with, you know, the other damaging energy producing mechanisms that we have, whether we're talking about fracking or other forms of dirty fossil fuels, right? Like, they all have their heavy footprint that plays out in a different way. To me, I think what we really just, rather than delving into sort of all of the injustices and all the devastation and damage that are inflicted by all of these energy things, what I really like to try to do is focus on the reality, because so many people deny that it's a reality, the reality that clean energy options really are available today. We have solar and wind and geothermal and other truly clean technologies that are available. And we have programs, we have plans that have been created for every single state in the nation, as well as the nation as a whole, even the world, that demonstrates how we can get entirely supported by clean energy options by the year 2050. All we have to do is make the right policy choices and put in place the right regulations and incentives and support at the government level to advance those clean energy options. Right now, our government is totally committed to those heavy footprint, you know, energy pathways. We need them to reform and really get onto this clean energy approach. And if we get on the clean energy approach, not only can we be totally supported by clean energy options by 2050 and really provide critical protection to future generations, even present generations, from the ravages of climate change, but, you know, for those who are concerned about jobs in the economy, if you invest in clean energy, you actually create 3 to 5 times the number of jobs going down the clean energy path than if you go down the dirty fossil fuel path. You know, with good jobs comes good salaries and good advancement, right, and the ability of people to provide for their families. So all the way around, clean energy really is the right focus when it comes to our energy future.
Comment.
So with clean energy, with like wind and wave and solar and all those clean energies, would there be injustice in the sense of, like, would it not be able to be affordable for, like, places that have those injustices of being, like, the victim because of their economic level, their race, or their social level? Would availability be made in clean energy to everybody rather than just the top?
Yeah, that's such an important question. And the way, again, to sort of rethink about it is, right now everybody has to pay for energy in one form or another, or has access to energy in one form or another. But the energy that they have access to, the energy that they, and I mean this sarcastically, have the privilege of paying for, is that dirty fossil fuel energy, because that's what the government has advanced and helped make available to everybody, right? A clean energy future would focus on government using their regulatory authority, their investments, their policies, their power to make those, to advance those clean energy options, so that it is the clean energy options that are available to all communities, whether you're talking about minority communities, low-income communities, or high-income communities, right? Right now, it's a matter of accessibility, and people largely don't have access because government has not ensured that access, right? So that's what we're really looking to do with a good, strong, clean energy path, is using the power of government to make that clean energy future affordable and available to everyone.
Maya, we've run out of time, but I have something very quickly I want to ask you. Are you familiar with the Title VI complaint?
I am not.
Okay. Because I heard that mentioned in a story article, and I didn't know what it was, and they didn't elaborate, and I just picked it up like maybe 20 minutes ago before we started the program, so I wanted to ask you about that. Maya, I don't know how to express my sincere appreciation, and Isabel and I are going to take you up on coming here to Tallahassee, Florida. We're going to work on a way of getting you here and having a big lecture, so thank you so much. Again, to my listening audience, I want to say thank you for your interest and your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Team archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.